This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this post-Labor Day edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, Congress is back to work as well this week, and their project list, well, it's pretty long. Virginia Congressman Dave Bratt is here with the details. And North Korea is at it again, reportedly testing a hydrogen bomb over the weekend. The situation with North Korea looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. Louisiana Congressman Ralph Abraham has more on that story. Also, Attorney General Jeff Sessions held a press conference today announcing the administration's plan to wind down the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. This quasi-amnesty policy was unilaterally adopted by the Obama administration despite congressional opposition. What will be the practical effect of today's announcement? Frank Gaffney, president and CEO of the Center for Security Policy, will be here with the answer. And we'll get an update on relief efforts in Houston, Texas. Our church, my home church, has a team on the ground in partnership with Grace Church. My executive pastor, Andy Stafford, will join us later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And let me remind you, just around the corner coming up next Friday and Saturday, my church, Greenville Springs Baptist Church, if you live in the Baton Rouge area within driving distance, Truth2017.com. You can find out more about the Truth Conference coming September 15th and 16th. A lot of the familiar names that you hear on Christian radio have Dr. Frank Turek will be there. Alex McFarland will be there. Lauren Green from Fox News will be there. Myself and Jeremy Daly will be doing the music. So find out more. Go to truth2017.com. All right. As I said, Congress is back after a about a month long recess. And there is much on the to-do list. Lawmakers have less than 2 weeks of legislative days to address the nation's budget, funding monies for the relief efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. And, of course, there's Irma out there as well. Who knows what's going to happen there? They need to renew the national flood insurance program that is moving toward insolvency, tax reform, health care still on the table, repealing Obamacare. And now the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, which we'll talk more about a little bit later. Joining us now is Congressman Dave Bratt. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Virginia. He's also a member of the House Budget Committee, the Education Workforce Committee, and he is a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Dave, welcome back to Washington Watch. Congressman, are you there? All right, I think we may have lost him there for a minute, but he was there, and he's coming back. Anyway, we're going to get kind of an update with him. We've got all these things kind of, well, I'd say perfect storm, but that probably wouldn't be the best analogy to use. But we have now the debt ceiling has to be raised, and there's news out that they're going to tie the debt ceiling and the relief to Texas and Harvey in the same measure. I think we, do we have him now? Do we have Congressman? Okay. We're having some phone issues with his cell phone, but we'll get him here. I think he's calling from the Capitol, and that's kind of dicey sometimes where you can get good signals inside the Capitol building. But announcing today that they're attaching the relief funding for Harvey to the debt ceiling and the CR, the continuing resolution, which makes it more difficult for fiscal hawks to oppose it. All right, I think we've got him now. Congressman, are you with us?
I'm on a radio, and I can't go up.
Hey, Dave, can you hear me? All right, well, we've got some issues going on there. But anyway, we'll get him here in a moment. And the issue with the debt ceiling, as well as the CR, if the monies are not appropriated, there could be a government shutdown. Now, the time frame by which this has to be accomplished is September the 30th. So that doesn't give Congress a lot of time, considering that it's roughly three and a half days a week that they're in Washington working on these issues. So this is going to have a full plate here in the month of September. Things are going to be moving very quickly, and so need you to pay close attention because it's going to require action. There are a lot of moving parts to all of this. Now, the Trump administration is asking for just under $8 billion in monies as the first, really the first payment or the first chunk of spending that in the wake of Harvey that some are estimating could be $100 billion. I mean, this is going to be a very, very costly hurricane cleanup. And despite, as I mentioned earlier, the deficit hawks in the House, it's going to be hard to see how this funding doesn't get approved, given the devastation that has taken place. I mean, and we're seeing these storms more frequently with greater intensity. And all of this happens now when you've got the debt ceiling having needing to be raised, which is, it's like a credit card bill for the country. And there's a limit. There's only so much money that you can charge on your card. Well, the federal government is about to max out its card once again. And what it has to do is the Congress has to allocate more money, basically saying they can borrow more money, raising that debt ceiling. Now, some Freedom Caucus members have threatened that if Speaker Ryan were to move a clean debt ceiling bill to the floor, that means, what they mean by clean, is that there's no attachments to it, no reform efforts, no. And that's, this has been the one point where even in the last 8 years, conservatives have been able to get some modifications of the way the government operates is with the debt ceiling. They've been able to negotiate some fiscal reforms. And so now some Freedom Caucus members, and if we're able to get Dave back on, we'll ask him about this, that the speaker is saying he's going to move a clean debt ceiling bill to the floor without any of the reforms or the spending cuts. And it's going to be difficult. The Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows, in an interview with the Washington Post last week, warned leaders against log-rolling Harvey relief and a debt ceiling hike into the same package, which leaders are, which, as I said earlier, they've announced today they're going to do. The Harvey relief would, he believes, would pass on its own, and it would. And to use that as a vehicle to get people to vote for debt ceiling is not appropriate, and I agree with him. What they're trying to do is get something that is not popular, does not have broad support among conservatives, and attach it to something that does. That is, you know, government helping out those that are impacted by these devastating storms like Harvey. So that's going to be playing out in the next few days. So we will be keeping you posted on that and what happens. I mentioned the National Flood Insurance Program, which is offered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and FEMA. It's insolvent and on track for bankruptcy. It's in debt almost $25 billion to the U.S. Treasury. And, of course, insurance claims from the Category 5 for a hurricane that hit the Gulf Coast this last month is not even included in that. I mean, just in the last couple of weeks. So that's not even included. So this is that's something Congress has to deal with. And, of course, North Korea, we're going to be talking about North Korea and what's happening there. As well as the Obamacare repeal. Waiting to hear over the break, there was a proposal by Senator Graham and Senator Cassidy that reportedly may reach the 50-vote threshold, which we talked about in early stages of the August break. They were discussing block granting this money to the states, allowing the states to manage these health care programs. We'll see if they can get that to a point of gaining enough support to get that out of the Senate and back over into the House. So that's just a couple of things. And then I mentioned DACA, which we're going to talk more about. We're going to talk more about that a little bit later. I think we may have him now. Congressman Dave Bratt, are you with us?
Yeah. Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Hey, good. Hey, we're glad you got you. Hey, we were talking about the connecting of the Harvey relief funds with the debt ceiling. Where do conservatives stand on that?
Yeah, well, first of all, the facts matter, and it's not. I'm a member of Congress, and we're the last to get the facts sometimes. So at first we thought they were going to tie them together. Now it turns out we get the $8 billion model. The word is sort of then with clean ceiling increase. And then the $7 billion package comes up next week, and obviously conservatives.
I think Dave, we've got some issues there with his connection in the house is horrible up there in the Capitol for getting service in and out of there when you're on a cell phone. So anyway, we apologize about that. We'll get him again later this week. But the point is, there's a lot of moving parts as Congress comes back to work this week, and I don't want to overemphasize the role that you play. Now, I do think that we've obviously, the magnitude of the devastation in Houston, Texas, and well, not just Houston, but in the areas, they were hit the hardest. They had the largest population density that was impacted by this. But you look at Texas, Southwest Louisiana, you know, these are those things that all Americans should pitch in, and they have been, and the government does have a role to play in it, but it's costly. And we've got to do a better job preparing for these things, even in the private sector. And I will tell you this, and I don't know if I'll have chance to get into it later, but I have seen over the last 12 years, going back to Katrina, when the federal government was turning people away who were trying to help rescue people out of New Orleans. They were literally turning boats away, saying, you can't help. To where this time I had members of my church were part of the Cajun Navy who went over, and the Coast Guard was actually directing them. They were working with out of the Coast Guard command post. And so there's been a sea change, if you will, of in the mindset of the federal government and private citizens and churches. They are working much more in concert with one another. And I think, of course, the magnitude of these events, it's hard to grasp them simply by the television reports and the pictures on TV. You got to walk through these areas. The magnitude of these events are such that the federal government, I think, realizes they cannot do it alone. And as I said last week, this is, you know, even the worst of times, we see the best in Americans coming to help their neighbors and reaching out to aid one another. All right. Again, apologize that we weren't able to get Congressman Dave Bratt in a good connection, but we'll get him later on this week. All right. When we come back, we're going to continue again with a member of Congress. We're going to talk about North Korea over the weekend, reportedly testing a hydrogen bomb. These folks, look, this guy's dangerous. What does that mean for America going forward? The president's talking pretty tough. Well, Congressman Ralph Abraham of Louisiana joins us next to talk about North Korea. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more. In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, North Korea tested a hydrogen bomb on Sunday, raising fears that the nation is getting closer to constructing a nuclear-tipped missile that could reach the U.S. The weapon was the most powerful North Korea has tested to date, with separate estimates putting the explosive yield at 50 to 120 kilotons. Now, just to put that in perspective, the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima in 1945 had a yield of 50 kilotons. So, pretty big. Now, growing tensions, many are wondering what North Korea could do next. With us now is Congressman Ralph Abraham. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Louisiana. He serves on the House Committee on Armed Services and the Subcommittee on Emerging Threats and Capabilities. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thank you.
Now, Congressman, apparently there's evidence that North Korea could be preparing for an intercontinental ballistic missile launch yet again. What do we know?
Well, we know that they are preparing, and again, whether that happens tomorrow or next week, we know they're going to launch another one. They've launched somewhere like 20 since the beginning of the year, so you know, there's no reason to suspect that they would back off of that right now.
It does not appear that they have responded in a positive way to any of the efforts that have been put forth so far. It looks like they're only escalating their threats to the U.S. and some of our allies in the region.
Oh, I agree totally. I mean, if you look at the sanctions that have been in previous administrations, you know, going back all the way to Clinton, nothing has worked with these crazy people over there. With Putin now jumping into the fray with his rhetoric, we've got China. At least President Trump is getting world leaders to pay attention to the threat of North Korea. So certainly we don't want any military action if it can be averted by any means. We want diplomacy. But, you know, we've got to really, really pressure China and Russia to step up to the plate and make this happen, because if they don't, then we are going to have some major world catastrophes like Putin is touting right now.
Now, on Saturday, President Trump tweeted, quote, the United States is considering, in addition to other options, stopping all trade with any country doing business with North Korea. So who would that include?
Well, that would include everyone, basically, especially China and Russia. Those are Iran, of course, all the bad players that we know that are opposed to anything democratic-wise are those that trade with North Korea. And the only thing that's going to stop or to bring North Korea to any table for any type of negotiating talks is we've got to cut their oil off. The sanctions that were passed by the U.N. Security Council about a month ago where we stopped the coal exports, well, that helps a little bit, but that's not going to stop Kim Jong-un from going ahead and developing what he's developing. The only thing that may, and I say that with a big question mark, that may bring him to the table would if we stop the oil imports going from China into North Korea. If we did that, then maybe even generals or military on North Korea's side would then consider taking their own action against Kim Jong-un.
So, Congressman Abraham, when you look at this potential threat of us ending trade with those countries doing business in North Korea, I think China obviously being one of the biggest, does that hurt their economy or does it hurt ours?
Well, it hurts both of them. And again, you know, I think everybody's going to feel some of this pain. But again, what is the option is a war and possibly a nuclear war. And that's just unacceptable. So, you know, nothing heretofore for generations has worked. We mount sanctions, and they keep building ICBMs. They keep building nuclear warheads that fit on these ICBMs. So we've got to change the game plan because the game plan simply has not worked for, you know, 40 years now. And if that unfortunately means that we all have to suffer a little bit, then so be it. But, you know, we've got to bring this to a closure. President Trump is, you know, the first president in a long time that not only sees the threat, but sees the detriment of kicking the can down the road. Mm-hmm. We may have addressed this, you know, 30 years ago, we wouldn't be talking here, but you know, now we've got this real threat where they do have missiles that are capable of maybe not reaching mainland United States, but they can certainly reach Australia, South Korea, and Japan, all our allies in the region, where we have tens of thousands of American troops.
Mm-hmm. No question that the previous administrations, Republican and Democrat, have basically kicked the can, as you said, down the road. And this president is saying, no, we've got, of course, I think it's at a point it has to be addressed. I don't think you have any options. I don't think you can kick the can further down the road.
You can't close your eyes anymore to this. When, you know, they, with the rhetoric that is coming out of North Korea is basically saying that, you know, we're in their crosshairs. We've got to take that seriously, especially with a guy like the crazy guy in North Korea. You can't trust him. And, again, I think he does border on maybe some insanity. And, again, that's just somebody you cannot leave with nuclear power in their hands.
Right. I mean, the rational actor approach of, you know, all right, you try to think how a rational man would respond to something, and so you're trying to negotiate. This guy's not rational, so therefore he doesn't respond as normal people would. Let's go back for a moment. We're almost out of time, but you said currently that he does not – we don't think he has the ability to reach the U.S. mainland, but he could certainly hit some other targets that would affect our troops, affect our allies. What do we not know? I mean, are there some possibilities that we're not aware of what he might be able to do?
Yes, indeed, there are possibilities that we don't know because we don't have any human intelligence on the ground over there. So there are possibilities that are very dangerous. And, you know, what you don't know is what can get you in the end.
Yeah, you're right. Congressman Ralph Abraham, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me, Tony. Thank you.
Okay, Congressman Ralph Abraham of Louisiana. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, Attorney General Jeff Sessions having an announcement today that the administration is going to wind down a controversial program put in place unilaterally by the last administration. Frank Gaffney, founder and president, CEO, Center for Security Policy, is here with the details next. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday. Feels like Monday, but it's Tuesday. All right, earlier today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the Obama-era program granting young illegal immigrants tentative legal status in the U.S. is illegal and will be phased out over the next 6 months. Known as DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the Trump administration opted to wind down the program in an effort to allow time to pass legislation that could offer a permanent solution for some illegal immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children and have grown up here. This is what the Attorney General had to say earlier today. We've got a short clip of what he had to say.
The executive branch, through DACA, deliberately sought to achieve what the legislative branch specifically refused to authorize on multiple occasions. Such an open-ended circumvention of immigration laws was an unconstitutional exercise of authority by the executive branch. The compassionate thing to do is end the lawlessness, enforce our laws, and if Congress chooses to make changes to those laws, to do so through the process set forth by our founders in a way that advances the interests of the American people.
With us now is Frank Gaffney, founder, president, and CEO of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, did the Attorney General get it right?
Tony, you know what this reminds me of as much as anything is the old biblical story about Solomon and the baby. I think what we've seen here is what it looks like when Solomon actually cut the baby in half. It's a mess. Unfortunately, I don't think that they have fixed the problem that the president said he would undertake to fix, which is ending DACA, because while that's what they're talking about doing, they've actually simply kept this whole operation going for at least two more years and quite, you know, calculatedly thrown it back to the Congress to keep it going permanently. If Congress sees fit to do that, which I think under present circumstances they're likely to try to do.
So you think that the Congress that was opposed to it under Obama will now do it, will actually legally implement this as a permanent program?
Well, that certainly seems to be the sentiment of those we're hearing from. I think there's a silent number of legislators, both senators and congressmen, that we may see doing what they did before, which is to oppose this. But at the moment, Tony, I have to say, the pressure is on, and I think it will ramp up dramatically, to continue what is effectively an amnesty.
Yeah.
For at least 800,000 folks who have come in under the rubric of this DACA program.
So explain for our listeners very quickly how this actually works, how the DACA actually functions, how this program that the previous president put in place.
Well, basically how it operates is that you have an arrangement whereby people who were brought here by their parents, who were ostensibly minors, and who were therefore, you know, unable to say, hey, I don't want to commit an illegal act, I don't want to come into the United States without permission, will they be given, under this approach, under what President Obama put into place, essentially some kind of legal status that sets them up for getting work permits, even green cards. There have been 39,000, apparently, who've gotten green cards out of it, and put on a pass, ultimately, to citizenship, if, again, President Obama had his way. That's how it worked. And we saw large numbers of people getting permission to stay here and to get these various benefits, including, I think, by the way, welfare and other, you know, taxpayer underwritten subventions. And the question was, as Donald Trump put it on the campaign trail, we're not going to continue this practice. It was done unconstitutionally, Tony, as you know, and he said he wasn't going to allow it to continue. I'm afraid that half the baby is allowing it to continue.
So the issue, which is often the case, is that you have, you know, someone does something like the president, the previous president, that is unconstitutional, but because people are sympathetic and they feel like, oh, that we can't do this, it would be cold-hearted, as many as described, we actually go along with something that is unconstitutional.
Well, of course, you know, Congress can officially do it, make it a statutory permission, and assuming that the court doesn't deem that to be contrary to the Constitution, then I guess it's not unconstitutional.
Right,
but the way Obama
point.
Did it is unconstitutional,
right.
For sure.
Right.
The way it's been practiced to this point
but
has been.
Let me quickly ask, because we're up against a break, but there are security issues here as well, are there not?
Well, there are a bunches of them. These are people who we don't have any vetting for. They have come here because their parents chose to have them come here. And some are even saying, hey, put them in the United States military. I think that's a very bad idea as well.
Mm. All right, Frank Gaffney, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Frank Gaffney with the Center for Security Policy. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, coming up next, relief efforts continue in Texas. We'll talk with Andy Stafford, part of a team of volunteers from Greenville Springs Baptist Church that are down in outside of Houston in the Woodlands at Grace Woodlands Church. We'll talk with him when we return, and then we'll be taking your phone calls a little bit later. So don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch in just a few minutes.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, in a bit, we're going to open up the phone lines. Let me give you that number, 866-372-7234. And here's what I just want to quickly get a read from you. Last week, the end of last week, on Friday, actually, President Trump called for a National Day of Prayer Sunday, calling on churches across the nation to pray for the people in Texas, South Louisiana, that were affected by Hurricane Harvey. And our church participated. We had a time of prayer. And I just want to know, did your church participate? I mean, here we had, you might recall a couple of weeks ago, I asked the president to have a National Day of Prayer, to call the nation to pray when we had all of the issues taking place in Charlottesville and all across the nation to address this issue of division. And there was a meeting last Thursday night at the White House with members of the President's Faith Council and or Faith Board, Faith Initiative, whatever you want to call it. And so the President issuing this call on Friday, and I commend him for doing it. I think it's exactly what America needs. These issues are bigger than we can handle. And we need, as a nation, we need to look to God, declaring our dependence upon him. Well, a lot of efforts are underway in Texas and South Louisiana by volunteers, church groups across the country going in, and many of the churches right there. One of the churches we're very familiar with in Houston, Grace Church. They have a couple of campuses. One is Grace Woodlands, and they have become a hub of relief effort for the community devastated by the flooding surrounding Hurricane Harvey. And our church, very grateful for the relief and the help that we got last year from churches around the country, sent a team that landed on the ground down there today. And joining me now is the executive pastor of Greenville Springs Baptist Church, Andy Stafford, who is at Grace Woodlands. Andy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Brother Tony.
So what's it look like on the ground there?
Well, it's very reminiscent of what we went through a year ago in Louisiana, seeing people's lives stacked up at the street in front of their houses. You know, the smell is the same, and as we all drove through, Brother Jay and Justin and David and I, it was just kind of like at church. Seeing it all again was hard to relive some of the things we saw a year ago.
And obviously, a much bigger area population-wise, the density of the population there in the Houston area. How great is the need there for relief supplies on the ground?
Oh, it's huge, Brother Tony. Like you said, it's just like what we went through, but bigger. But it's amazing to see the Grace Church Woodlands campus here. Just a loving people with all they've been through. Just was telling Brother Jay and them how awesome it is to see a people serving in the heat, putting together plates of food for folks in their shelters and anybody that needs food. But they're doing it with a smile on their face, with the joy of the Lord in their hearts. It's just refreshing to see people not just working out of obligation, but working in the joy of the Lord. It's just really inspirational.
Well, and of course, that's a great church there, Grace Church. Pastor Steve Riggle, the senior pastor there, and Garrett Booth as well at the main campus in Houston. Have they had a chance to partake of the Cajun jambalaya yet?
Well, today, Brother Jay, we cooked. We didn't cook. Brother Jay cooked, and we helped. We cooked chicken etouffee. You know, that was a big hit when we went through it. And most people are calling it jambalaya, and that's okay. But it's a little different. It came out really good, though.
It reminds me of that old commercial, Shake and Bacon, we helped. So Jay did the cooking, and you helped, huh?
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, we'll stay in touch. Give Pastor Steve my best and tell him we're going to continue to encourage people to head their way to give him a hand.
Will do. Appreciate you, Pastor.
All right, y'all. Be safe. Andy Stafford, Executive Pastor of Greenville Springs Baptist Church, are down there with the cook team cooking at Grace Church in the Woodlands. In fact, by the way, folks, I'd encourage you, everybody can do something, okay? Do something. And if you can, I would encourage you, a couple places I would encourge you to go to make contributions. Samaritan's Purse. I'm a contributor to Samaritan's Purse. I believe in their work. I've worked with them. I've watched them. They're the best. And they're there. In fact, they were staging their equipment at our church in Louisiana to move it in as soon as the roads were clear. So you can go to Samaritan's Purse, find them online, samaritanspurse.org. And it's a great place to help. They use the money wisely. Let me tell you, they're good, very good. And, in fact, we're going to have Franklin Graham on the program Thursday kind of giving us an update on the relief effort. So I strongly encourage you to partner with Samaritan's Purse. And then gracewoodlands.com. That is the other – that's actually where you just heard from Andy. They're reaching out into ministering in the community. They're coordinating relief efforts. They have on their website a place where you can donate, and 100% of what you give goes to the relief effort. And I've worked with Pastor Steve Riggle and that team, and they are top-notch. So gracewoodlands.com, and it'll take you right there on the homepage there. And continue to pray. We've got this other storm brewing out there in the Atlantic, Irma. And, Lord, we just need to be praying God's hand of protection. And that's one of the things we were praying Sunday in this National Day of Prayer. And I want to know, did your church participate? Let me know. Give me a call, 866-372-7234. I want to get a kind of a read on how many churches actually participated in that. I mean, look, when you've got the president finally agreeing to say, yes, we need to pray. Folks, we need to pray. We our churches need to back up a president who would be willing to say, hey, we need God if we're going to be able to handle this. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. The number to call to get in on the conversation here in our final moments together. The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, he called for a day of prayer in the state of Texas. Actually, he did it first, and then the president followed suit like the next day. And the governor was at Hyde Park Baptist Church, and he reminded Texans through the storm, he said, he is Lord. And that is exactly what we have seen this past week, he said. And, even it's hard to describe, unless you've been through one of these events like this, that you see some of the best things in the worst situations. And it renews your hope. in America, in the American people, when you see them respond the way that they do. But there's a lot that we need to be praying for as a nation. And I'm grateful, again, that the president issued this call, this proclamation, calling upon us to pray. It should be something that requires us to be prompted to, but it's good when you've got national leaders recognizing that this is of importance. And there's this reluctance, and I would say it's probably pride, for political leaders, and they're afraid of what the left is going to say. Like, you know, Barry Lynn was quick to jump on it. Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, he jumped on it, saying, prayer doesn't unite us, it divides us. Hey, go figure. And I think leaders need the courage to stand up and do what they know is beyond their ability to accomplish themselves. And so a recognition of God. This is what happened back in the 1950s when we actually changed our motto as a nation to Eisenhower, did they? To In God We Trust. And that was, for our older listeners, you'll remember that, or for those who know their history, that was during the height of the Cold War with Russia, the standoff there. And there was a recognition that we needed help. And so there was the change to the pledge under God. There was a change to the national motto. All that happened in the 1950s in the midst of the Cold War. So I think, I commend the president for having the courage to call the nation to pray. And I think the way that we encourage our leaders to do things like that is that we participate with them when they do that. So I hope that you will make sure your pastors are clued in to things like this. And one of the best ways to do it is to be a part of Watchmen on the Walls, the Watchmen on the Wall network of pastors, because when these things happen, we obviously quickly communicate with pastors and get that information out there. All right, we're going to take a couple calls here before we wrap up. Let's go to Louisiana, where Todd is on the line. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. We need to pray because without prayer, you know, nothing else matters to me. You know, I mean, if we believe in God, you know, why shouldn't we pray? And I was in a flood myself, and that's pretty rough. And
yeah.
when I look at TV and I see the people going through what I went through, you know, it really hits you where, you know, in the heart. It really hits your heart.
And, it does. It does. It's a reminder. As I walked through the halls of our church on Sunday, and the relief supplies were stacked up in the hallways that just 1 year ago had the similar setting, a little bit more a year ago. Of course, this time we're boxing it. We were putting it into 5 gallon buckets, cleaning supplies to take to Houston. But it does bring back those memories. And I found that our folks in particular, I commend to my congregation because they were very responsive having gone through this themselves. And by the way, folks, to make it easy for you to connect with Samaritan's Purse or Grace Woodlands, you can just go to TonyPerkins.com. We've got links up there on both of those websites. Todd, thanks so much for the call. Absolutely, we need to continue to pray for the folks in Texas, Southwest Louisiana, and then be praying that God would just cause this other storm out there to dissipate and go just die out. This is a bad storm out there. But it is, when you have gone through, to Todd's point, when you have gone through something like this, you're much more understanding of other people. And it's not, you don't have sympathy, you have empathy. You're able to empathize with them and those experiences that they have. And it's a long process. Well, I can tell you, Texas is going to be at this for a long time. And so maybe you can't you can't free up your schedule in the next couple of weeks or so to go over with, say, like Samaritan's Purse. And if you're going to go over, you go with an organization. You know, you might be a part of the Southern Baptist. They've got relief teams. They do a good job as well. But if you're kind of looking for somebody to team up with, call Samaritan's Purse. They process the whole thing for you. They give you a place to stay. And you'll know that your time is well spent because you'll be working. And this is going to be going on for a long time. Okay? So if you can't make it the next couple of weeks, don't worry. There'll be ample opportunity. We are still housing back in Baton Rouge at our church, Samaritan's Purse rebuild teams. The first, almost 6 months, maybe about 6 months, was the immediate relief wave, that the first phase of the program coming in, gutting out the houses. I mean, there's still houses being gutted out 6 months later. Then they went into the second phase, which was the rebuilding phase, and that's anywhere from 12 to 18 months. And with the size of the area impacted by Harvey, it's going to be a long time. And so everyone, as I said, everyone can participate. Everybody can do their part. To find out how you can participate in the effort, and again, go to TonyPerkins.com. And I, again, highly recommend Samaritan's Purse. Grace Woodlands, another one right there on the ground. You might recall we did an event with them a couple years ago, I Stand Sunday. So we're standing with them again as they minister to the people in the Houston community. So again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. As I mentioned, on Thursday we'll be joined by Franklin Graham. He's going to be joining us and giving us an update on the relief efforts in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. All right. And we're going to be tracking a lot of stuff this week with Congress back. Be prepared, okay, because we're going to need to move quickly on some of these things to communicate with your members of Congress so that they know where you stand. A lot of bad things can happen when there are very tight timetables. Okay, so be ready, be prepared, and make those phone calls when we call upon you. In fact, let me just give you that number so you're prepared. Put this in your phone, all right, so that you've got it right there at your phone, at your fingertips. It's the Capitol switchboard, which is 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. Go ahead and plug that into your phone so that you can be prepared at a moment's notice to make your phone call. All right, folks, out of time. But Lord willing, program will air again tomorrow, and I hope you'll be tuned in. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.